My name is Joni Siegel, and I'm the host for this podcast. Now, you may know that I also host other podcasts. Our first inaugural podcast was the addiction podcast, Point of No Return, which is focused on the subject of addiction. And then, because we wanted to highlight good people doing good things, we started the Why I Help podcast. Now, one of the areas that we're very passionate about, and when I say we, I mean my husband, the producer, and myself, one of the areas that we're very passionate about is education. And so we decided we wanted to launch an education podcast, and that's what this podcast is all about, Education Reformation Podcast. And we are not educators, but we are parents. And we believe that probably the most important educators in our country, in our society, are parents. And so we figured that made us qualified to be able to do this podcast. And today we're going to have someone on the podcast. This is our inaugural podcast. Today is episode number one. We're going to have a woman on named Barbie Rivera. And Barbie is first and foremost a mom, but found herself in the position of needing to become an educator for her kids. And she is an amazing woman with an amazing story. And so we figured we would have her on this first episode, and then we'll have her later on as well. So let's talk to Barbie Rivera. So Barbie Rivera, thank you for being on the podcast today. When I gave an intro for you, I said that you were first and foremost a mom, and then from there you kind of had to become an educator. So tell us how you got started in the whole field of education with the subject of education. Give us your background there.
Okay, so initially I'm an artist, and I wanted to paint my way to fame and fortune. I had four children very young. I was 28 with four kids. My oldest son, who is a, you know, I'm not bragging, he's a really smart little boy. He spoke two languages. His behavior was amazing. He went to school, and I'm like, they're going to love him. And 2 weeks into the year, the teacher pulls me aside and says, well, he can't read. He's mentally handicapped. I'll never forget those words, mentally handicapped, and he needs to be evaluated and medicated. I'm like, wow, that's not a solution that I'm going to go for. We're not doing that. So I ended up doing the most ridiculous thing. I knew my son was miserable. I knew he wasn't being taken care of. And I left him in school for 1 year. I'm like, okay, I'll work with him after school. And at the end of the year, my first grader was convinced he was stupid, which is just like a knife through my chest. I'm like, there's no six-year-old who has the right to feel that way.
Nope.
So I put my art supplies away. I've never gone to college, never had formal education. I was pretty much a brainiac in school. I did really well in school, but it wasn't my interest. And so I kind of just changed my mind about my art form. I'm like, I'm gonna create an education for my children. Like, kind of like, screw everybody else. I can teach my son to read and write. I can teach my daughter. I can teach my other two boys. How hard can this be, right? Anyway, so that's how I got started. And within the first week of me homeschooling, I think I had 11 other children in my house. Realize I had two babies, a newborn, almost newborn, and a one-year-old.
Oh, my goodness.
And my daughter was four, and my son had just turned seven. And I'm like, all right, this is school, you know, that's how I'm going to start. I had no idea what I was doing. I spent a fortune on materials, and now here I am. My school has grown. It's an accredited private school in Miami, and I cater to kindergarten to 12th grade.
Barbie, what year was that you started?
1992.
Okay. Yeah, the reason why I ask is I just happened to look up some statistics on homeschooling, and I found that in 1990, let's see, it's kind of hard to read it. It said there were something like 275,000 maybe people homeschooling, and now it's over 5 million. I'm wondering, though, when you started, like, were there a lot of materials available to you? Was there?
There wasn't any materials. And I'm going to tell you the support, there wasn't one person who thought I would succeed at it. Like, wow. They're like, you're going to ruin your children. My parents included. They're going to be eating paint when they're 30. And I'm like, well, I'll make sure it's non-toxic.
There you go.
I'm not putting them back in school. You get one chance. Can't do that.
Yep. Yep. So you then had a school with like 11 kids. Was that your income? Is that how you made money?
Yeah, that was it. And that's from then on, you know, I mean, I love the art and I would love to make money on my art. It's another podcast, but I really never pursued it to perfect it. I draw well, I paint well, but yeah, I tutor, I homeschooled, and that's how I've made my way.
So there wasn't a lot of curriculum available. Did you have to kind of formulate your own curriculum as you taught these kids?
Well, yeah. And I had to work backwards. First, one of the first things I did was I got the state standards, which were nonsense. I'm like, what is this? First graders need to formulate a 3-paragraph essay. I'm like, I'm happy if a first grader isn't eating dirt in the backyard. I'm like, this is insanity. So that was really, all right. So here's the thing, like when you're in a home and you have 4 little ones, and I was soon to be a single parent, I raised them pretty much by myself. And I ended up with one more. A friend of mine got ill and she's like, raise my son. I'm like, okay. So now I have 5 on my own and you're running, you know, it's like paycheck to paycheck running. I'm not the only one who's played that game. I won't repeat it. It's boring and overdone. However, that was the thing. Now my children are grown. The situation in education has not improved. And now I'm like, what did I do? Because now I'm asked, what did you do to create such a strong family unit? Because my kids are pretty rock solid. You know, no one's in jail, no one's in trouble, no one's on drugs, anything like that.
Well, and which is the one that I met? Which is the, is that Mike, Michael? Is one of your sons?
Yes.
I think Michael is the one I met, and I can just tell our listeners and watchers that he's an amazing young man. I mean, amazing. And it's funny because I went to the internet and I just, you know, I looked at what the psychologists had to say about why maybe you shouldn't homeschool, that your, you know, your kids are not going to get like the social interaction. I mean, it's such false data out there about why you shouldn't homeschool. And this isn't a podcast about, oh, let's everybody homeschool. But I think that so many people are frustrated with education. There's a lot more going in that direction. I mean, that article I was talking about, 5 million now, you know, compared to 2019 when it was 2.5 million.
Right. Right. So, well, people are fed up.
Yeah.
They're fed up. And I'll tell you, now that my children are grown, when they start families, they already know their kids aren't going to go to daycares and they're not going to go to school. And this is nothing against teachers, because teachers have the same frustration that the parents do.
Yep.
You know, again, when I was growing up, I think I went to kindergarten in 1969. Kindergarten was kindergarten. There was no academics at all. None. We sat in a circle, we sang songs, we had 3 recesses, we did story time, cut and paste time, a police officer came in, taught us how to cross the street. You know, it was all controlled play. We had to line up to go to the bathroom at a certain time. And when you get into what kindergarten was, again, using an old dictionary, 1913, kindergarten was ages 4 to 6, meaning it could take 2 full years or 3 full years to have that child ready to start a formal education, which was first grade. Now we have pre-K1, pre-K2, pre-K3, there's testing. I run into kids that fail kindergarten. I'm like, how can we fail kindergarten? The parents are frustrated and the teachers are frustrated.
And how do they, and what do they do if they fail kindergarten? Do they get put
they
back
to
do another year?
Or they're passed on. But now, you know, now that my kids are grown, now I have a little more time. And I was like, okay, I want to retire. There's no way I'm going to retire. I can retire from the school, which I need to do. But the problem is the materials that exist today are awful. They're just awful. The math is not math. The reading is not reading. Phonics hasn't been phonics since the 30s. And some of the books that I use Why Johnny Can't Read. This is what I use to teach my son. Now, it has, he has lists and things like this. This is great. What I want to do with this is turn it into this. This is the phonics book from 1940, I think.
Yep.
So that students can do it.
You know, I have to just put in an editorial comment. I am not an educator, but when I first heard that phonics was being taken out of the curriculum, and instead there was this new system of reading called whole word, and when a child encountered a word they didn't understand, because they didn't know phonics, they couldn't sound it out, they were just supposed to kind of invent the definition. I mean, you know, not being an educator, Barbie, not experiencing what you experienced, I know that that's nuts. Okay, I want to use a really bad word here. I'm not going to, because I'm going to keep this a clean podcast, but it's completely insane. It's like if you don't teach, like if you're building something out of blocks, if you just take away the bottom layer, the whole thing falls down. Phonics is the building block for reading and writing and understanding our language. And I just go, how could you possibly think that taking phonics away has any workability whatsoever? I'm sorry.
Well, but it's done on purpose. That's the thing. This is an intentional infiltration of the American system. Our families have been torn apart. The father, the mother unit, I don't care if you're gay. I don't care. There's still a family.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's still a family unit. And we need those members actively contributing to themselves, to others, to the family, and thus society. That's what our country is built on, right?
Yep.
Anyway, religion's been taken, God has been taken out of schools and sporting events, and you're not even allowed to say Merry Christmas, which I think it's all nonsense. And we go back to, again, you know, part of my research is in 1913, in that area, the United States was number one in the world educationally. And there is an interesting quote from that time period where it said the United States public school system could wipe out world illiteracy because the phonics system was so strong. So what happens? We get infiltrated. We get infiltrated by, this book tells you all about it, by the way. Right? Scary about how this stimulus response, man is an animal and will respond to certain stimuli, and even getting into the whole word, it just like totally torpedoed our education, right? Okay. So
yeah, that we let me stop you for 1 second. That book, sure. The Leipzig Connection, that's yes. Not where that quote that I saw you present, that's not where that that quote from Hitler is it?
No, the Hitler quote, and I have it in front of me, is...
Okay, you guys need to listen to this quote. This is Adolf Hitler. If you don't know who Adolf Hitler is, Google him. And if you have any question about whether or not Adolf Hitler had your best interest at heart, you need to figure that out. I'll be quiet now.
Okay, so here's the quote. Let me control the textbooks and I will control the state. Adolf Hitler. And in Nazism, what they did was they changed the German curriculum was rewritten to support Nazism. Now, Pearson, I need to go into who Pearson is. Pearson's the world's leading educational company. It provides text, lesson plans, and curriculum from preschool to college, right? It publishes under Scott Forestman, Prentice Hall, Addison Wesley, and so on. Common Core was pushed by Pearson. The implementation of Common Core was included in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. If the states wanted part of the $48.6 billion stimulus money, they had to agree to Common Core. It was essentially a bribe. And the states did it. And in Common Core, this is where you're getting police brutality, pick your gender, all of these things that it makes no sense. I mean, my personal opinion, raising four boys and a girl. Each one of my boys wanted a tattoo when they were five of like SpongeBob right across their forehead. And I'm like, you have to wait to 18. When you're 18, do what you want to your face. But what do we know? We know that the child is going to outgrow it or change his mind. Right?
Yep.
That's it. I remember growing up, my parents called me Todd because I wanted to be a boy. Now, why did I want to be a boy? Because I didn't want to wear a dress to church. It was cold. I grew up in Ohio. It was nothing about. Like, what did I even know when I was 4 and a half? All I knew, my brothers got to wear pants and I had to wear a dress. In this day and age, my parents never would have fallen for anything. They called me Todd. They could care less. But in this climate today, who knows what therapies I would be pushed into because I said that.
Yep.
And that really, I'm getting off the point of the homeschooling, right? But we have now the textbooks in the United States of America since 1930 have been a slow infiltration of the dumbing down of the student, the overwhelming of the student with nonsense data, the breaking of that bond between the teacher and student, because people become teachers because they want to help. And it's a very creative position. Right. To me, teachers, done right, a teacher is right there next to an artist.
Yep.
It's a very creative and could be fantastic career.
Yep.
And it's just been obliterated by
because their hands are tied. Their hands are totally tied with what they can say, what they can do.
Exactly.
It's insane.
Right. So I want to go over a couple of examples of some of this Common Core or the curriculum the way it is. In high school government, there's a terrorism propaganda poster assignment where high schoolers have to basically do PR or promotion for a terrorist group as a project. It doesn't make, what's the point?
If my child came home and said they had to do that, I would probably pull them out of school.
That's right. That's right. Like, what are we focused on there? Right?
Yep.
And I can tell you as a homeschooler, because I did not want my little group of kids that they only saw the little group of kids. We were very active at Miami Children's Hospital, very active there. We were very active with a homeless shelter. We were very active with a pet shelter. But I asked, what do we want to do? Who do we want to impact? And guess what? These kids that I were homeschooling, they're like, oh, let's go to the hospital. And I'll tell you, we did one little story. We donated a bunch of superheroes, right? We had some, I don't know, hit up your grandma and grandpa. Everybody paid $5. That was our fundraiser. Cupcake for $5, whatever. And we went with $50 to Target. I saw the manager. I'm like, we're going to spend $50 on superheroes. Will you match us? Yes, they will. And we ended up buying these really nice Marvel superheroes. And we donated all of them to the hospital. And we got a call from the volunteer services a week later that a child was four, needed a bone marrow transplant, and was freaking out before the surgery. And the surgeon was like, don't we have anything for this boy? And this boy was like Superman, Batman, all of that. So they went to the volunteer place where we just donated really cool toys, and they taped superheroes to his bed. Aww. Like he had one on each side. He had another one in front of him and he was allowed to hold one in his hand. I could cry. Ugh. And the surgeon brought it in. They go, you make it through this. All of these are yours. And he was like, okay. And the surgeon was like, it calmed him down. Like, I mean, they were going to do the surgery anyway, but now we have a 4-year-old little boy. And when he came out, he had his superheroes, you know? Wow. And I'm like, and my little kids, my children and their friends, woo, they were like, you know, I mean, we had a little pizza party to celebrate a child that we would never meet. But now my children are like, okay, who's next? What's the popular toy? Tickle Me Elmo. Good. We want 10 of those. And we worked it out. We would do little fundraisers, but the kids were solving it, right?
Yeah.
Putting their attention on solving it, making them help someone who's handicapped or ill or whatever is so much more positive and survival than, okay, let me kids, let's do a terrorism propaganda poster or let's do how much we hate the police. I can't stand it.
Yep. Yep.
Well, it makes no sense.
Let's face it, Barbie, and it's a very smart campaign, because if you want to control people, all you really need to do two things: dumb them down and drug them. Now, you and I have already had a podcast on our other podcast about addiction, about the drugging aspect, but then just dumb them down. Then you can control them because they can't learn. They can't make their own decisions. So it's actually a very brilliant strategy on the part of the bad guys.
Right. And it is. And it's definitely a strategy. And one statistic that I have now, I have to put my glasses on so I see who it's from. National Center for Education, 2016. Only 10% of Americans can read above an eighth grade level. So that's roughly equals 32 million people in this country who are literate. Yep. There's only 10% of us have the skills and the knowledge needed to steer the 90%. And I'm going to tell you something on that. Okay. So again, I'm going to use something that's painfully simple. Me being a little kid, when I'm 7 years old, what would I want for dinner? Ice cream, cake, and this, that, and the other. My parents said, absolutely no way. Oh, I'm being oppressed, right?
Yep.
They made me eat. I had to eat what was on the table, which was, I don't know how my mother did it, every day at 5 o'clock, potatoes, meat, a vegetable, bread, everyone at the table, right?
Yep.
And we had to eat it. Then we could have a little bit of dessert, right?
Yep.
So my parents, they didn't let us stay up late. If I said when we got up in the morning, I had to make up my bed. There was no choice to that.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
The point is now, and we weren't allowed to throw a fit either. You know, I'll give you something to cry about, Barbara. I'm not the only one who was raised with those words.
Yeah. No, I remember those too. Yeah.
Yeah. Hello. Right. So now we have a population of people who don't know that they don't know. They're angry and they can be completely manipulated. And what they're angry about, and some of the issues are frustrating, but the only way we can solve it is through knowledge and compassion. We can't solve it by putting bricks through windows or shooting each other. Mm-mm. We can't.
Nope. And you know, I've told this story before. We have a good friend who was going into prisons. He was doing some kind of a program. I can't remember what the program was, but he went into several prisons here in Florida and he talked to the warden, and he was in one of the prisons that had a lot of death row inmates. And he said to the warden, he said, is there any common denominator amongst these prisoners that are here on death row? And the warden said, yeah, they can't read. And that's a real indictment of our education system and this whole area of reading and comprehension and, you know, common denominator, can't read.
Right. And that would be, I mean, here's the thing, like, okay, raising five children on my own, that was tough, but it would have been impossible if I was illiterate.
Yep.
It would be impossible. Not that I'm not a good person, but take away my education and my knowledge and my common sense, it's a mess.
Yep. Yep.
So we have, all right. So, how are we doing on time?
We're fine.
Okay, good.
I ain't going to cut you off. This is too important a subject, Barbie. And more people out there are getting fed up with education and things like Common Core, Whole Word, New Math. And yeah, I'm not cutting you off.
Behind. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll tell you, like, okay, so I have my school, and when I get a 10th grader, 11th grader, or 12th grader from another school, do you know where they actually are at? Almost 100% of the time, no matter what school they go to, third sixth. Or fourth grade level.
I was going to say third sixth. I was going to give them sixth at least.
No.
Wow.
No. They're getting B's in algebra. They don't know what the word means, and they can't do 9 times 6. Can't write a sentence. Can't spell. Cursive and manuscript handwriting. Just handwriting is not taught. The correct formation of letters. And then just on the side note, sloppy handwriting is a sign of a mental illness. Right? So it's this huge circle. So we don't educate the children properly. Pearson is owned by the world bankers, who own the media, who also own ADHD research labs. Come on.
It's a no-brainer.
And the fact that a parent can't help their child with their homework is a crime. It's a crime. Yep. And it's almost like a joking matter. Like, it's not a joke, though. Right? And we have these kids that are just miserable, and the school system is not going to change.
No, you make a very good point, because if my child brings home math homework that I can't do because it's some kind of new math, I mean, what's wrong with that picture? I know math. I know how to do math. I know how to do addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. So if I can't help them, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, well, because there's something new and exciting out there. Hey, everybody, 2 + 2 is always going to equal 4. I don't care what anybody does to anything, do you know? So the fact that I think parents think, oh, this is some new math, yo.
Right. Well, again, the parent has been manipulated too, right? Yep. Into thinking that the textbook, it's a hardcover book. Look at all the people that wrote it. It must be good.
Must but be now an authority. I'm going to make, yeah.
It must be an authority. They should be listened to. But I'm going to make a point, right? Okay, so I'm not the greatest cook in the world. I cook out of a cookbook. My favorite cookbook is from the mid-1960s, a Betty Crocker. A pie is a pie. If you Google blueberry pie now, you're going to come up with 50 different recipes, but it's all basically the same. Blueberries, sugar, a little bit of salt, a little bit of cinnamon, and butter inside a crust. It doesn't change. Thanksgiving dinner does not change. The turkey, you make it the same way. We pass down these recipes from generation to generation to generation to generation, and we have successful Thanksgiving dinners year after year after year after year after year. Even though the people at the table change, and grandma passes away, we keep her going because the turkey is exactly the same way she did it, her mother did it, and her mother's mother did it.
Yep.
Right?
It's their recipe.
And no one, if I came in and I said, oh, we're going to do it a new way, forget it. It doesn't work. Well, guess what? Guess what? Mind blown. Math, phonics, spelling is exactly the same. And we're going to go into, if you don't mind, I want to jump into a solution here, right?
Well, absolutely, because I was going to say, you know, some people listening, they may think, okay, but what do we do about this? Because, you know, the situation is somewhat dire. It's been building for years and years and years. Some of us, like my husband and I, we were fortunate enough to be able to put our kids in a private school that has a very good curriculum. And our kids, you know, they're pretty bright. They're pretty socially responsible, and they're you know, they're good kids. But I say kids, they're in their 30s, but, you know, in their 30s. But, you know, there's a lot of people who can't afford that. And, you know, one of the things we obviously want to do with this podcast is, yes, shine a light on what's wrong with the system, but what do we offer them as a solution? So I'll be quiet again.
Okay, so now I'm going to go into solution mode. Okay, so first of all, I want to read talk about Frederick Douglass. So Frederick Douglass was a slave who taught himself to read, right? And he says this, filled with the determination to read, I used to carry almost constantly a copy of Webster's spelling book in my pocket. And when sent on errands or when I would go to playtime, it allowed me to step aside with my young friends to take a lesson in spelling. I'm sorry, this is really small and I'm struggling to read it. I'm greatly indebted to these boys. So this is Webster's Speller. This was basically the first phonics book, right? Now, Webster was a genius because he thought that language would stabilize and unite America. And this is from 1795, right? Because at that point, we're a new country, but all of our textbooks were written by the king. And it had that viewpoint. So Webster wanted to stabilize America. So he wrote the Speller and later the first dictionary to preserve religion, the Christian religion, to make the Constitution known, to make an education a right offered to all, and to end slavery. That's how he felt, how powerful words were. So this, a slave, and it wasn't just Frederick Douglass, there are many African-American, Booker T. Washington, also taught himself to read from this book.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So you take this, right? So this is one. This is how phonics used to look. This is the teacher's manual in the late 30s. And wonderful book. It's phonics, right?
Yep.
It's not all of this other, okay, we need to teach them grammar. We need to teach them this. We need to teach them that, right?
Yep.
So another thing that I want to show you, find it. First grade math. And it says here, arithmetic you find in games, puzzles, counting, and play. To introduce a formal textbook before it can be mentally grasped would take away the child's natural love for numbers and place upon them a burden heavier than they could carry. I love it.
Natural. Say that again. Natural.
Natural love for numbers.
Natural love for numbers. Wow.
And if you look at this, it's super simple. And it goes over the same thing over and over and over and over again. One more. Fourth grade. Mathematics. This is a lot of word problems. And all of the word problems are applicable to the time period, like buying candy, things like that, right?
Right.
It says aims are mastery rather than inaccuracy and uncertainty. Lower aims in arithmetic cannot be justified. The greatest waste in arithmetic lies in half learning and then forgetting.
Wow.
That's intense. So, solution, right?
Yep.
Solution. Back in 1910, We were number one in the world educationally.
Right.
America was number one in the world. We were using books like this. Yep. And I've collected hundreds of them, right? I have hundreds of them.
And so, I can just tell you that the Webster's, I just bought it on Amazon. It's been reprinted. So you can buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah. And then just so you know, like for dictionaries, older versions are always better than the newer versions because yep. the newer versions have been rewritten, right?
Yep. Yep.
And it's not a good rewrite. There was actually one quote, if I can find it very quickly. Yes.
Well, while you look, you know, basically what we're saying, readers, as you, our listeners, is that we have to get back to basics. There was nothing wrong with phonics. There was nothing wrong with the way you and I were taught to read. There was nothing wrong with the math that we learned. And we need to get right. back to those basics. And that's what Barbie's talking about.
Right. Okay. So two things, and this is from Why Johnny Can't Read. This is a grandfather who, I think this is 1955, was shocked to find that his grandson was doing the whole word learning. It's like, what happened to phonics?
Yeah.
The American dream is essentially equal opportunity through free education for all. This dream is beginning to vanish in a country where public schools are falling down on the job. Mind you, I'm not accusing the reading experts of wickedness or malice. I'm not one of those people who call them un-American or left-wingers or communist fellow travelers. All I am saying is that their theories are wrong and that the application of those theories has done untold harm to our younger generation. Right?
Yep. Yep.
It's like we have frustrated teachers, frustrated parents, frustrated students who can't teach, read, or learn. So, solution time. I want to solve myself the billion-dollar fraudulent education industry by rewriting textbooks based on 1910, putting together a series of workbooks that go over, as Webster suggested, defining words and having exact what are we trying to teach. And if yep. you look at like most workbooks, most textbooks today are just a confusion of, it's got fractions, it's got percents, it's got decimals, it's got this, it's got that, all on one page. And I'm like, people, let's strip it back one skill, let's master it, because lower aims in arithmetic are not justified. Right. And yep. this is what I did for my children. And I'm going to tell you something, Joni. I mean, I have a fairly decent IQ of like 135, fairly decent IQ. Mm-hmm. Right. My children are 10, 15, 20 points higher than me. And how did I do it? I didn't give them textbooks.
Yep.
If I may say, it was a pain in the ass.
Yep.
When they were learning grammar, I'm like, look, all I want them to know is that a period's at the end of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And again, and how long do I have to do that? Over and over and over and over and over. And yep. again, if you take how long does it take for a child to master something? Some is fast, some is long. But I'm going to tell you, for my boys, brush your teeth. How many times did I say it? Hundreds,
365 times, exactly. 20.
Exactly. Until they were 12. And yeah. what happened when they were 12? Oh, they discovered girls.
Mm.
And now they wanted to, you
brush
know.
Their teeth.
I'm like, thank you. Okay, good. Now I don't have to say that. So in a funny story, you mentioned Michael. Michael's my youngest, right? And he really benefited from all my mistakes. He got the best education out of all of them, right? And Michael was, he never thought he was stupid or dumb, like my first. It took me 2 years to undo that, by the way.
I believe
it. 2 years to get my oldest son to have confidence again.
Wow.
That's disgusting.
Yep.
No, No one has the right to do that.
Nope.
Anyway, so my youngest son, he used to write, and he was 8 years old when he gave me the first story. And it was on notebook paper. I'll hold this up front and back. This is not the story. And it had one period, which was at the end. And it was, he had like 97 words misspelled. He used the word "and" like over and over and over again. Right. But guess what? I didn't correct any of it. None of it.
Yep.
I took 10 of the words and I'm like, those will be your spelling words for the week. 10 of the words, you know? So, and then we just evolved things the same way. As if my son were to draw a picture of a purple cow on Mars, I put it on the refrigerator. I'm like, this is amazing. Look at that cow.
Yep.
Look.
You don't go, there's no cows on Mars. And even if there were, they wouldn't be purple.
I'll never get another picture.
Exactly.
So I
exactly.
had these stories and they were hilarious. They were always making fun of Damon. Right? All of them. And they were hilarious. And thank goodness I saved them. And I remember when my son was in the fourth grade, now he's 10, and he was learning punctuation. And when I taught him how to do quotation marks, now this was not a book or anything. This is me at the board with four or five of his friends. This is how you, this is what quote, what, this is what quote means. In quotation marks, you would have thought I got him a brand new bike. He was like, oh, this is going to make such a difference. And his stories, he kept writing them and writing them, and they were ridiculous, but now they had ridiculous quotes and they were hilarious. So fast forward to when he's 15, he's writing music, he's writing poetry, he's writing his writing amazing. And now, you know, he's going to be 30 soon. And he's so smart. And it's because he wasn't shut down.
Yep.
When he was a little kid.
Yep.
You know, and on the writing, just to be fair, because, you know, again, my son Damon was being murdered by his writing. Red marks. Oh, he mixed this question mark. It was a question mark. It should have been a period or an exclamation. He didn't spell it. He needs to proofread better. I'm like, actually, he doesn't. James Patterson, billion-dollar author, does not proofread his work. Sorry. He writes. An editor comes through and proofreads. If you try to get him to proofread his work, it will jam up. So how can we expect a five, six, or seven-year-old to proofread their work? Let them write.
Yep.
Let them do what they are doing. And if the sentence has two words, work with them and acknowledge that and see that spaceman, right? I get what he's saying. We have time to develop that. But yet now it's so accelerated. Like I say, the standards back when I started, kinder or first grader will be able to develop a three paragraph. Like, what?
Unbelievable.
What? It doesn't even make sense.
Hey, Barbie.
So anyway, go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off. You're going to do this curriculum, and that's huge. And that's going to be, you know, that is going to be amazing. If someone wanted to homeschool right now, and obviously your curriculum's not done, would you recommend they get some of these books that you're talking about? Because I think you can still get, I know you can get the Webster's one. Can you get these books? Where would you recommend they go?
Okay, well, I would recommend Why Johnny Can't Read.
Okay.
I would also recommend them to email me, which I'll tell them. I'm going to give you my personal email here. Barbie, okay. B-A-R-B-I-E, Rivera, R-I-V-E-R-A, 22 at hotmail.com.
Okay.
Because I do have some things.
Okay.
And again, it depends on where the student's at. But just realize if you're going to homeschool the materials that are out there, just consider they're almost useless.
Okay.
Right? So you almost have to do it all yourself.
Interesting. But that might be daunting for some people. So thank you for sharing your personal email.
It will be daunting. But again, okay, so now let's go into solution.
Okay.
So since we last spoke, I started compiling like a spreadsheet of each grade, kindergarten to eighth grade. What are the workbooks that are needed to be created for that grade. Because what I want to do, Joni, is let's say you have a 5-year-old grandchild. I say, Joni, it's $400. It's $300. It's, I don't know how much.
Right.
But here it is. And you have access to phonics, mathematics, cutting, writing, some science, and you have access to lesson plans. The lesson plans go with the workbooks, and they tell you what games you need to buy. And these games are like Hi-Ho Cheerio. You can get it at Target. You can get it on Amazon. Nothing is obscure or out of date or anything like that.
Right.
So again, looking back on these materials from the early 1900s, one theme that's throughout all of them is that the materials are constructed in such a way that it has a slow gradient of progression. The students should be able to do the work with minimal interference from the teacher.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Very interesting. So my task is to take kindergarten, put it into workbooks that are attractive, they're fun, and they go from not knowing anything up to can count to 10. That's all that workbook's going to do. Then the next book is going to be writing to 10. That's a whole other skill. Then the next workbook, on and on and on and on.
Yep.
So that even if you have a lazy parent who doesn't follow the lesson plan, they're going to be able to look at the page and know, hey, I want you to color everything that's red, or color everything that starts with the letter S, or, you know, solve the addition problems.
Right.
Like they'll be able to know what to do.
Right.
Now, if I have that, so now picture, we have kindergarten all the way to eighth grade. Now we're going to be able to produce eighth graders that know all punctuation marks. They know how to spell. They've had to write resumes. They've had to do things they've had to find a problem in the community, solve the problem in the community, right?
Yep.
Because they're not just going to be sitting in front of a device.
Right.
But that's what education used to be. And we're going to strip it back, definitions of words, function. And if you want to add religion to it, do it. If you want to add culture to it, do it. As you said earlier, addition is addition. And these textbook companies, part of the reason why they're billionaires is every 2 years or every 3 years, they update.
Right.
We don't need to update how to make a blueberry pie.
Right.
It's the same. How to cook a turkey. It's the same.
Yep. And 100 divided by 5 is going to be 20 today. It's going to be 20 next year.
That's right.
Century from now, it's still going to be that.
It's still going to be that.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
What worries me, and this sounds strange, but I was thinking about this the other day. What if reading is never taught?
Yeah.
Anymore? What if the next generation, after I'm long gone, is just being told vocally?
Yep.
What if they just listen?
Yep.
That's that. We're already into, what's it called? Brainwashing.
Yep. It's true. It's true. Barbie, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Thank you for talking to us today. We're definitely going to have you back on the podcast because this one's just getting started. But I think that with what I read today, homeschooling is becoming a thing, and not just with, like wealthy mothers who can afford to stay home. I mean, it's growing across all different sectors of society, and it's going to get more and more. I mean, 2.5 million in 2019, granted COVID played into that, but now we're up to 5 million homeschoolers, and it's only going to grow from there, because there are things happening in the schools that people are going to take exception to. They may not know about it now, but when they do, they'll definitely take exception to it. So one more time, give us your email so that if somebody listening or watching wants to reach out to you and either help you or get help from you, give us your email one more time.
Okay. And then I want to say two more things.
You can say two more things.
Barbie Rivera, Rivera, 22@hotmail.com.
Perfect.
Okay, so now I want to tell you. So by having these materials, one, what's this going to do? Teachers are going to be able to teach, right? Mm-hmm. Because the way that this is going to be structured is, okay, let's just say we're teaching a kindergarten how to count to 10. And on the lesson plan, I have three or four things that are count to 10, play hi-ho chariot, play this game, play that game. But then the teacher can add their own spin to it and create games and this, that, and just reinforce it. And now the teacher is in control of and putting his create, her create, into this curriculum. The other thing is we can get, like what I did, was I made my living as a homeschooler. It's not a living that I'm going to have a Ferrari. I am a career renter. I'm in Miami, one of the most expensive cities in the world to live. But I can take other people, and now I'll have materials that it's easier to deliver to those kids. And then my final thing, this needs funding. And this isn't going to, I mean, when you talk about doing the project that I am proposing, this is thousands of man hours. And like I say, we're up against a $1 billion fraudulent industry.
Yep.
This isn't going to be, let me hold a bake sale and a car wash and get four of my best teachers to throw together fourth grade this summer. It's not going to be that. This is a multi-million dollar proposition that I'm not trying to sound arrogant, we can get our country back on this, because we're going to get our citizens back, and people are going to know, and they're going to have common sense, which is greatly lacking. And they're going to be able to read, write, pick their career, and thrive in it. I've done it with my own children. I've seen it work. And now it's time to get to just bring that out. That's all that I wanted to say there.
And I have one response for that. Amen.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening and watching our first episode of the Education Reformation Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the Good News Podcast Network, because we are all about good news. Okay, there's a little bit of bad news in terms of what's happening in our education system, but the good news is you can do something about it. You can get some of the books that Barbie references, and there are a lot of people out there who are working very hard to educate our kids the right way. So you're not alone. If nothing else, you can reach out to Barbie, and we will keep coming up with people who are doing the right thing, and we'll give you more and more resources. So thank you so much for listening, and keep studying, keep reading, keep learning, and we'll keep talking.